Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good morning and welcome to Dynamic Word Bible Studies. This is your host, Felicia, and my amazing, wonderful, marvelous co-host.
Trump's favorite.
And he's the one and only today. He's co-hosting with me. We do have the strong silent backup to our program. Caitlin is here. She's adorable. She probably won't talk. And then I've got...
She's pinned down, so she's not allowed to move.
And we've got Congo, who hopefully won't talk. Because we don't want to hear him bark.
Sometimes he does bark.
Every once in a while he talks to us, but we try not to let that happen. So today we've got a really, really exciting program. The most exciting part is that we're finally finishing up the first chapter of John, which we've been in now. This is week 10. Week 10 in one chapter. But I'm really excited about this chapter.
We are really journeying through John.
We're kind of lollygagging through John. Let's put it that way, okay? Lollygagging. But I really am excited about this show. But before we get started, I think that we should cut to commercial, let our sponsors know that we're thinking of them and all that sort of thing, okay? So we'll be back very, very soon. And here we go.
Hey everyone, come check out the Proof Negative radio show here on FreedomizerRadio.com, Monday through Thursday, 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern, 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. on the Pacific Coast as we fight the New World Order and rock the health freedom world together.
Food waste is one of the most easily solvable problems, literally the low-hanging fruit of environmentalism. Pardon the pun, it's my job.
About 20% of all produce never makes it off the farm.
It's because they just look a little funny,
a little weird, but when you cut into it, it's perfectly good food.
It's just a total shame. It's totally good stuff.
We buy ugly produce directly from farms that often would go to waste because supermarkets won't buy it because of how it looks, and we deliver it to people's doors.
Beauty standards for an apple.
This isn't that ugly at all. Like, that's the most common first box, like, complaint we get.
We change that. We educate people. We show them how amazing these fruits and vegetables are.
Have food delivered to your house.
Box of produce every week.
And it's more affordable.
At a very reasonable price.
Cheaper than the grocery store.
I spend a lot less time in grocery stores.
It's an adventure every time that you open your box.
High quality produce.
There's nothing wrong with the produce.
And they taste exactly the same, if not better.
Save those fruits and vegetables that get wasted every year.
And it's delivered to your door, like...
But what? Why wouldn't you do?
Please go to our website, freedomizerradio.live, and sign up for Imperfect Foods today. Use our promo code and get money off your first order. Go ahead and get some organic and all-natural meats, dairy, snacks, breads, and non-GMO produce. Most people say they hate wearing shoes and would go barefoot if they knew they were allowed. People say it all the time on their social medias. But they are worried that someone will say something to them. So everyone wears the cheapest flip-flops with the least amount of fabric on them. Most people do not even know that it's completely 100% legal to go barefoot into a store. Most people think that driving barefoot is illegal, but it isn't. Driving barefoot actually is safer than wearing most shoes. Going outside barefoot for a walk is one of the healthiest things you could do, but most people are afraid someone will say something. Or they quote the myths and the rumors that their grandma told them years ago. The fact is, there are no laws against driving a car, going to a store, or eating in a restaurant barefoot. So don't give in to bad fashion, hurt heels, or a broken flip-flop. For more information, please check out barefootislegal.org or find us on your favorite social media.
All right, guys. Well, we are getting ready to finish up the first chapter of John. We're making some progress now. I'm so excited. Can we open up with a word of prayer there, Prof?
Sure. Lord God, thank you for this day. Thanks for everything you did for us. Thank you that we're able to come spread your word today. We pray that no one makes any noise, unless the people who are actually supposed to make noise, unless we're looking at you, Congo. and we pray that these will be our words, be yours. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen. So today, we're going to talk about Jesus' calling, and this is such a fun lesson for me. I started getting into this, and I was like, you know, you get to the end of the first chapter of John, and all of a sudden action starts happening. We're no longer in theology, and this is interesting for me because we spent obviously a whole year and a couple of months, a year and some change in Romans, which is all theology, right? And so that's kind of my area of comfort, right? And so I was excited to see God speak a new message and a new word through the activities of Jesus and his disciples instead of just looking at theology. So that's kind of where we're going with this. We're starting out in John, and we're going to go to chapter 1, verse 35. I'm going to read all the way through 50. This actually wraps up the entire first chapter of John.
Wow, how convenient. I actually have that pulled up.
That's amazing. Do you want to read it for us?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah, as long as I have it here, right? It's funny because she told me to pull it up.
I did tell him to pull it up while we're on commercial. So.
John's disciples follow Jesus. The next day, John was there again with two of his disciples. When he saw Jesus passing by, he said, "Look, the Lamb of God." When the two disciples heard him say this, they followed Jesus. Turning around, Jesus saw them pulling and asked, "What do you want?" They said, "Rabbi," which means teacher, "where are you staying?" "Come," he replied, "and you will see." So they went and saw where he was staying, and they spent that day with him. It was about 4 in the afternoon. Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, was one of the two who heard that John had said and who had followed Jesus. The first thing Andrew did was find his brother, Simon, and tell him, "We have found the Messiah, that is the Christ." And he brought him Jesus. Jesus looked at him and said, "You are Simon, son of John. You will be called Cephas," which when translated is Peter, which in Greek means the rock.
This is where John introduces us to the concept of Simon having a different name, probably to keep confusion between him and the other Simon.
It's funny because it goes from Greek and then English, but the English name is Greek.
It probably wasn't actually translated like that. Read it again, that part.
You are Simon, son of John. You will be called Cephas.
Which means?
Peter. Which when translated.
It actually says which when translated means Peter, right?
Yes.
So it's written in Greek.
Right.
Okay. So probably it would be like, well, your name is a really bad example of this, okay, because you have a traditional name, right? Okay, your name is Cross, and it's Cross, right? But like Caitlin, okay, so she has a name. The name is actually Gaelic, okay, but hers is an English transliterated spelling. So if I was writing in English, it would be like, I would say, her name is Caitlin, which translated means pure, okay? Because all names kind of have a meaning. Do you see what I'm saying? So Cephas must have had a meaning of that kind because, so we call him Peter, but the Greek was Cephas, right? And it would have been written as Cephas. Because the whole thing was written in Greek. So our reading is a little bit weird when we say that. We're like, Peter and then Cephas, and we're all confused. So it would have said, which means the rock, meaning that his name wasn't the rock like Dwayne the Rock Johnson. It wasn't actually whatever rock is. His name's meaning meant the rock. At least I'm assuming that.
It is
his nickname, but I always think it'll be fun to watch them at the Pearly Gates trying to figure out who the real rock is.
Anyways, Jesus calls Philip and Nathaniel. The next day, Jesus decides to leave for Galilee. Finding Philip, he said to him, "Follow me." Philip, like Andrew and Peter, was from the town of Bethsaida. Philip found Nathaniel and told him, "We have found the one Moses wrote about in the law, and about whom the prophets wrote, Jesus of Nazareth, the son of Joseph." So they didn't have last names back then, so they would identify them by who their father was.
Or what region they were from.
Yeah.
Like, so Judas Iscariot, I think that he was from a certain region. So, anyway.
"Nazareth, can anything come from there?" And Samuel asked. "Come and see," said Philip. Dang, Philip stole Jesus' line. When Jesus saw Nathanael approaching, he said of him, "Here truly is an Israelite in whom there is no deceit." How cool would it be to get that kind of a compliment from Jesus?
So, yes. Yes, indeed.
"How do you know me?" Nathanael asked. "I saw you while you were still under the fig tree, before Philip called you." Then Nathanael declared, "Rabbi, you are the Son of God, you are the King of Israel." Jesus said, "You believe because I saw you under the fig tree. You will see greater things than that." Then he added, "Very truly I tell you, you will see heaven open and the angels of God ascending and descending on the Son of Man."
Yeah, so I do agree. That's a really cool compliment, right, from Jesus?
Right.
I think it's funny. So we watched the show The Chosen. Shout out to The Chosen. We love them. And Nathaniel's character, they really take that to the extreme, that description of him, a man in whom there is no deceit. And so this is one of those things where he basically says whatever's on his mind, whenever it's on his mind. And they take, he's a truth teller. He says what he thinks.
So he says what he thinks, and he thinks what he's about to say.
Yeah, and doesn't necessarily think about what he's about to say. He just says it.
Yeah.
So we don't know if he was like that or not, but clearly he was not going around puffing people up, right?
He wasn't a butt kisser, let's put it that way.
Right. So I did take the liberty to kind of check this out. So the word that we used for Peter, okay, so Cephas, is definitely like a name that has meaning in Greek as opposed to being the word, because the actual word for rock is Petros in Greek.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I'm going to assume that Cephas was Aramaic or yeah. Hebrew.
John was actually written in Greek and Aramaic. So
no, John was written just in Greek.
Oh.
Yeah, so all the New Testament books were written in Greek.
He spoke Aramaic.
He spoke Aramaic. So it's very strange to think about, but very often we're reading the words of Christ, and we have them usually in red in our Bibles, right?
Mm-hmm.
But what's crazy about when he's speaking is you have to think through, like, where is he saying this? Because if he's speaking in the temple, then he's saying it most likely in Hebrew. So Jews, when they were in the temple, they were all trilingual, okay? When they were in the temple, they spoke Hebrew. Always.
Because that's what the ancient scrolls were written in.
All the ancient scrolls were written in there, but they continue to teach in Hebrew, too. So it's very much like today. If you go to a Jewish temple, they're generally speaking in Hebrew, and everybody who's there, who's over the age of 13, has taken Hebrew classes and knows and understands Hebrew. Now, in everyday life, you can assume he's generally speaking Aramaic, except probably all the times where he's addressing mixed crowds or Romans, and then he's probably speaking Greek, okay? Because he would have spoken Greek. It was the common language of the common man at the time. But just like if you were in, say, the Philippines, okay? The Philippines, everyone speaks English. They're taught English in school. But generally speaking, if you're visiting one of the islands and people are talking to each other, like Filipinos are talking to each other, they're usually using their local dialect, whatever that local dialect is, and there's like 15 of them. And then there's also the national language, which is Tagalog. And so the national language is the Filipino language that everyone on the islands knows how to speak. So if they hop from island to island, they're speaking in Tagalog, you know what I'm saying? And then if they're speaking to their neighbor that they live next to, they're probably speaking whatever their local dialect is. But on all official documents and then when they go to school, when they do business work, they're probably speaking in English. So it's the same sort of situation. There's multiple languages going on. And keeping that in mind, sometimes it makes it more clear what Jesus is saying when. And why people were upset by it, because like when he comes in and says, I am that I am, I am who I am, then if you know he's saying that in Hebrew, you'll understand that he is invoking the unique name of God that is given to Moses at the burning bush. But without that understanding, you might miss that detail. So anyway, brief little roundabout that apparently took like 15 minutes. We better go. Okay, so let me just say, it is absolutely wild that God came down to earth in bodily form in Jesus Christ, and that so many people completely miss it. Like, it's crazy to me. I have literally so many questions about this. He came down to his own people who arguably should have had a deep understanding for his character and for his ways. Why did so many people who claim to know God not recognize his faith? And what made the difference for his disciples? And I miss him today if he came back. Like,
ooh.
Like this is a big question. I'm like, I don't understand, but I spent a lot of time in his word. I spent a lot of time studying God, right? So I have a kind of relationship with Jesus which would make him recognizable to me if he were to come back today. That's a big question, right? The scholars of Jesus' day spent all of their time studying. I'm feeling like this might be low on battery, so I'm going to go ahead and plug this in. Okay. Well, that's convenient. Okay. The scholars of Jesus' day really kind of spent all of their time studying what it would be like, what God was like. And yet, even amongst all that studying, it's really kind of insane that they just don't really have this clear picture of who God is. They were super concerned about observing even the smallest detail of God's law, and really, who can blame them? A brief read of the Old Testament would clearly paint this whole picture of God, who's not one to be trifled with, okay? Like honestly, he expects reverence and respect, and he expects you to follow God's law. And being occupied and oppressed can certainly make it challenging to maintain holiness and practice the laws of God. Like, think about it. Whenever the Israelites would start to depart from their practices of keeping themselves holy and separated and sanctified, what would happen? Like, God's judgment would fall. They would be oppressed. Sometimes they were taken over or overrun. Sometimes they were exiled to another nation. They lost land and freedom, like all sorts of things. And currently this stage that Jesus steps on to, they are being oppressed actively. Okay? So it's a whole thing, right? And don't we even find today that it can be difficult to honor God with our lives when we're surrounded by worldly influences? So I can kind of understand why they're, like, so adamant about all these smaller practices that we just kind of look at with modern eyes and go, like, who even cares? You know, while they were under Roman occupation, do you think that they need more judgment from God at that point? They're trying to get back in his good graces because they want God to release them from this occupation. Now, I think of it kind of like an emergency room. Cross, I don't think you've ever been in an emergency room, have you?
Never been to a hospital, actually.
So think about it this way, okay? So to clarify, he hasn't actually been to a hospital because he was born at home. So he's been to a couple of doctor's offices, but probably way before you would have remembered it, right?
Closest I've been is like a dentist.
A dentist, yeah. So he's a really healthy type, so we don't have to go to the doctor's offices very often. So in an emergency room, it's this super weird situation where there's like every single person who's there is in a traumatic situation at the very least. Most of the time, they're actually in pain, okay? So you've got all these people set up, and they're all hurting in one way or another, right? Do you think that they notice the next guy who comes in with a broken finger or broken arm or broken leg? No, they don't care. You know what I mean?
They got their own problems.
They have their own problems. And even if your problem is that your hip is dislocated, so painful that if the next guy who comes in is potentially having a heart attack, you don't care. You just need to go see the doctor. You know, they're going to take that other patient first, and it's still going to make you mad because you're in a lot of pain, okay, if that makes sense. So to be clear, these folks are going through an awful lot. Don't we, like, don't we even find it so hard to keep God's law, though? Or when we're surrounded by the world, like she's in just right now. You can imagine the pressures. And Roman culture was crazy. Like, crazy, crazy, right? So, they were great. The Pharisees were great teachers who awaited Messiah and hoped that he would free them from this oppression the same way that the Maccabees did during the Maccabean Revolution against the Greeks, once and for all freeing Israel, because they got free and then they immediately were taken over by the Romans, right? So that freedom didn't last very long. Now, honestly, can we be real for a second? Like, the Pharisees and the Sadducees get a bad rap. Like, who can blame them, though? Like, nobody wants to be occupied.
Nobody wants to follow someone who says they're Jesus and then be wrong.
Right. Like, it's a whole dynamic that's really kind of crazy if you think about it. And you're like, you know, if you think about it for 2 seconds, like, who can really blame these guys? I can understand them feeling the way that they felt and struggling with this Roman occupation and wanting to be free. What made it really hard for the teachers of Israel to see God standing right before them was twofold, in my opinion. First of all, they had improperly diagnosed the problem from which they needed saving. Okay? While Rome was this oppressive force, far more damaging to God's people was the problem of sin. And Rome was a temporary oppressor, where sin had been oppressing people from the beginning of time at the fall. But somehow we, like, lose focus on this. If we are diagnosing ourselves as sick, but we're diagnosing ourselves as having the wrong problem, whatever the cure is we're looking for is not going to help us. You see what I'm saying? And so in this case, they're saying, listen, the problem is this horrible Roman oppressive government that is occupying us, which is a problem. Because, like, actually the problem is the sin of mankind. If the Romans weren't sinful, then you would be fine. If you weren't sinful, you would be fine. What we need to do is take out the root, which is sin.
Like one or the other, and one of you has to be not sinful. Like,
well, actually, I think the God solution was that everyone had an opportunity to turn their heart to God and not be sinful. But the problem is that with that whole free will still comes the choice to sin, and a lot of people are still going to choose that, right? So God wasn't interested in simply freeing a nation. He was interested in freeing the entire world and all of mankind from sin one heart at a time. A people truly committed to God would not oppress others. Jesus wasn't what they expected. They were looking for the wrong thing. Secondly, rabbis had spent their entire lives learning to observe details of the law legalistically, but had departed from the close relationship and love that was enjoyed from the forefathers, Abraham, David, and Moses. Like, they had a real strong relationship with God. They weren't just following rules. They were following the Lord. They didn't just have a fear of God and a desire to do right, but they had these hearts that loved God and were open to having a strong relationship with him. And that's kind of what Israel had lost. You know what I'm saying? There was no dancing before the Ark of the Covenant. There was no... adoration for God. So I don't want to say there was none. There might have been, but they were more concerned with the minutia of the law than the relationship with the Lord. So let's talk about how the disciples responded, okay? Because this is a really interesting text to see how they respond. And then to think, would I do the same thing? Like, crazy. So reading the account of the disciples being called by Jesus, I'm struck by how they responded, and it makes me wonder if I would have done the same things that they did. First, Jesus is joined by Philip and Andrew, who were previously the disciples of John the Baptist. Now think about it. John the Baptist was a really wild guy. He's psycho, right? Like, while he was certainly an observant Jew, I don't picture him as measuring that minutia of salt that needs to be given for a particular offering, right? Like, he's not that guy, right?
Like, that's the whole canon.
Right, he's doing his own thing and dancing in the desert in camel skin. Like, he's a unique folk, okay? But he did train his disciples in one thing that was extremely important, and that was always looking for Messiah. Like, that was his whole thing, is I'm just waiting and watching for Messiah. Have you ever considered what you look for that you're sure to find? If, like the Pharisees, you're looking for people deviating from the law, the evil in people, you're certainly going to see it. But if, like Philip and Andrew, you're looking for Messiah, you're sure to find him. Okay? Are we busy looking for Jesus in our everyday life? Are we focused on legalism and looking good in front of other people? And that's a hard question, right? The second thing that I noticed is that the disciples dropped everything to follow Jesus and responded immediately to his call. Okay, well, let me tell you something. It's been a crazy, crazy, I don't know, 5 weeks, like a little over a month over here. It's been really, really crazy. And I have been particularly tired. It's taking a mental toll, an emotional toll. And I've been working a lot and after work and taking care of co-ops on Monday, I realized I had not even taken the time to write the show.
So she started yesterday.
This is a bad place to be in, okay? And so I took aside a couple hours and just sat down and got serious. I knew what I wanted to talk about, but I just had not spent the time to write the show, you know? I had a lot of busyness in my life, right? And I'm going to tell you, there was a moment where I was like, I could just make my life easier with cancel a show. And I thought to myself, no, because God's called me to do this show. And if God's called me to do it, I need to respond in faithfulness and consistency. So I did, like, kind of pull everything together. And it came together really fast, like I said, because I already kind of knew what I wanted to say. I just hadn't sat down and written the show. So there's the question, right? Am I consistently responding immediately to the call of Jesus, what he wants me to do? In John's gospel, the account of John and Andrew following Jesus, Philip and Andrew following Jesus is super clearly laid out. They're looking for Messiah with John the Baptist, but when they realize who Jesus is, they just get up and follow him. John gives an account of Peter, John, and James following Jesus as well. But Luke actually includes more detail in his gospel. So we're going to look that up right now. We're going to look up Luke chapter 5, and it's located in verses 1 through 11. So Luke chapter 5, verses 1 through 11. Go ahead.
One day as Jesus was standing by the lake of Gennesaret, the people were crowding around him and listening to the word of God. He saw at the water's edge two boats there, left there by fishermen who were washing their nets. He got into one of the boats, and then the one belonged to Simon, and asked him to put out a little from shore. Then he sat down and taught the people from the boat. When he had finished speaking, he said to Simon, Put out into a deep water and let out the nets for a catch. Simon answered, Master, we have worked hard all night and we haven't caught anything. And because you said so, I will let down the nets. When they had done so, they caught such a large number of fish that the nets began to break. They still went to their partners in the other boat to come and help them. And they came and filled both boats so full that they began to sink. When Simon Peter saw this, he fell at Jesus' knees and said, Go away from me, Lord, I am a sinful man. For he and all his companions were astonished at the catch of the fish they had taken. And so were James and John, sons of Zebedee, Simon's partners. Then Jesus said to Simon, Don't be afraid, from now on you will fish for people. So they pulled their boats on shore, left everything, and followed them.
Okay, now a couple of points. One of the things that I think is interesting is the Gospel of John says that Andrew, okay, who was one of the disciples who originally came from John's disciples, or from John the Baptist's disciples, he lets Peter know that he's found Messiah, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but interesting that Peter doesn't follow him until he sees for himself that Jesus is Messiah, right? Through this miracle. But when they make that decision to follow Jesus, They'll go home and pack their bags and sell assets or stop by the bank and grab some cash to maintain their lifestyle. They just respond in full obedience and walk away from all that they had, and they start following Jesus with full abandon, okay? The only disciple who did not do this was who? Judas.
Oh.
Right? He's still stealing from the treasury, trying to maintain lifestyle and trying to keep things going for himself. And he's still doing his own thing. I just lost the switchboard. So I'm just going to, while we're talking, pull that up over on my phone just in case we need it. Okay, so let's go to the studio here real quick. Hopefully we're still recording. Says I'm still on the call. So I've got the studio up here just in case it doesn't come back up there. So anyway, there we are. Okay. Finally, the third thing that distinguished how the disciples followed versus what the Pharisees' response was, that the disciples were open to seeing Messiah in unexpected places and ways. Here we're going to talk a little bit about Nathanael and his response to Jesus, okay? When Philip tells his friend Nathanael about Jesus, he's totally confused. Basically, he's surprised that someone as important as Messiah would come from a place like Nazareth, okay? So Nazareth, it was kind of considered
the butt of everyone's jokes.
It kind of was. So the thing about Nazareth was that it was kind of a lowbrow town, let's put it that way. Not the place that you would consider a great holy man, teacher, or instructor to be from. Actually, because we're from Las Vegas, that was the immediate thing I thought of was, it was kind of like it was from Las Vegas. Oh, okay, so like, what, this dude from Vegas?
It's like this amazing miracle worker and healer is coming from the number one gambling capital of the world.
Sure, sure. I mean, like, we're considered Sin City, so you wouldn't expect a great theologian, pastor, miracle worker, healer, or the Messiah to come from a place like this.
Nope, we're a great city, since we're sin abound, grace abound, much more.
Indeed. It's kind of funny because we're like, oh, wow, how judgmental is Nathanael? But honestly, like, please put this in context, y'all. Would that be your reaction, too? Look, I live in Las Vegas, and I'm not expecting Messiah to come out of here. Okay? maybe you're confused about where I live, but 5 blocks from here, I'm telling the kids not to look at the billboards, okay? Like, it's a whack place, okay? And so we shouldn't be too shocked about Nathanael just kind of putting his foot in his mouth and being like, what, our boy comes from there? Are you serious? Okay. Have you been to a Christian event here, right? Like when rock bands are touring, and what's the one thing they always say? They always point it out. They're like, we're amazed at how big this crowd is from
Las Vegas,
Sin City. There's a lot of assumptions made. And you can't,
I mean, they're correct or something.
Right. I mean, not for us necessarily, but yeah, there's plenty of people who struggle with sin here. And so that's kind of a whole thing. So I have to try to restart this computer. So, I mean, if it happens today with Las Vegas, we can totally understand Nathanael's reaction and response to this, right? I think that it's fair to say we can understand it.
Yeah. Pretty accurate to what I would also say, because I feel like...
I mean, we live here. It's a thing. It's a thing. Like, we get it. So, what is that revelation of where Jesus was from? Was so off-putting to Nathanael that he chose not to follow Jesus. Could it be for some people? Like, maybe not for us, because we've kind of, you know, actually, ironically, both of us grew up in Las Vegas, right? You grew up in Las Vegas. I grew up in Las Vegas. And so,
Dad grew up in the snowy tundra that he calls a state.
Yes, he grew up in Connecticut. So, for us, I think that we have kind of grown up in an environment where you do have to expect to find Jesus in the unexpected. Because it's not really expected for him to be here ministering.
Like, at all.
Right.
Anywhere, in any way, shape, or form.
But we've got tons of amazing churches that are... That are, you know, here in Las Vegas. So,
the one that we go to.
Yeah, totally. So we're used to searching for Jesus in that unexpected place, okay? Isn't that the same way that people kind of treat him today? If they see, you know, Jesus ministering in unexpected ways and places, now, not everybody, again, but... Certainly, some of the high churches certainly are like, wow, like ministry shouldn't be taking place here or here or here, and yet it does. What if they perceive his views on sexuality or sin as closed-minded or beneath their ethical perception? Would they stop looking any further into his claims of divinity, whether or not he would be in a better, or whether or not he'd be in a better place to judge these actions? So I think that we do find that today. But really what we're doing is we're judging God based on our own moral standard that we've developed ourselves and saying, well, since he doesn't do what I expect, he's not God. Do you know what I'm saying? Never thinking that our expectations might be the problem. You know, expectations can always be a challenge. So basically... There's power in Jesus and in his life to change lives. And we saw in the Gospels that the lives of the Pharisees and Sadducees broadly went unchanged. And yet you have the disciples whose lives are forever changed because of God and his presence in their lives, right? Certainly, God had intervened in the lives of the disciples in powerful ways that changed their lives forever. And Jesus still calls disciples today. And that's what's really, really, really amazing about it, is that Jesus is still sitting here calling disciples, bringing people to him, if we're willing to listen. But it's really, really important that in that, that we're open to seeing Jesus in new and unexpected ways, that we're looking for Jesus, and that we're willing to respond immediately to his call. We finally have everything pulled back up, and I've got to get everything logged in just in time for a commercial break. Are we most concerned with looking for the good in others? Are we most concerned for looking good in front of other people, being that person that people think of as disciplined and holy and righteous? Or are we most concerned about a relationship with God? Because the one emphasizes myself and wanting to look good in front of other people. Most of the time when we're sharing our testimony, when we're talking about Jesus, it's not about making me look good. It's about letting God look good because I was so bad. And his light shines through and makes me better. So we did get this studio up right on time so that I can do our quick commercial break. Are you ready for that? Okay. So we'll see you after this for questions and answers.
Please check out the Barefoot is Legal radio show right here on Saturdays, 1:30 p.m. to 3 p.m. Eastern Time, that is 10:30 a.m. to noon Pacific Time, as we show you all about your barefoot rights and living a barefoot lifestyle. And for more information about the 501c3 nonprofit Barefoot is Legal, please check out barefootislegal.org.
That's right. The Jokers and Jesters Comedy Tour is back on the road. We are currently promoting our second Amazon Prime special, Jokers and Jesters, the next special. We will be touring small towns across this great country of ours. So for our tour dates, follow us on Facebook at Jokers and Jester Comedy Tour or at our website, jokersandjester.com. It's a great night of music, laughter, and magic. Don't miss us as we come to a small town near you.
Of all the grounding studies, the one that really got our attention is called Electric Grounding Improves Vagal Tone in Preterm Infants. In the study, 26 premature babies in an NICU were connected to grounding wires. The heart rates of the grounded infants stabilized. And their vagal tone, a critical measure of infant health, increased by 67% with grounding.
The information is provided for general informational purposes only. The contents are not intended or implied to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Ground Therapy Incorporated makes no representations about the efficiency, appropriateness, or suitability of any specific tests, procedures, treatments, services, opinions, healthcare providers, or other information that may be contained in or available through the information provided.
I'm talking too fast and you can't understand what I'm saying.
You're on air. All right, so we're back and we're ready for our Q&A. Cross always loves those legal disclosures.
It's sure so fun because I get to add a snarky comment at the end.
You like that, huh? Okay, cool. So I guess I have to stop ignoring these warnings on my computer. Okay. Because it just shut down in the middle of the show. It was super
so
fun. Good. So great. But we didn't lose the show, and that's what's important, right?
Yep.
Okay, so.
This is going to be some good show.
Right. It's always like that. So let's do our Q&A. Let's talk a little bit about Jesus. What does following Jesus look like for you? Are you willing to follow him with full abandon, or are there things in your life that are difficult to give up? I think I can go first on this one.
Yes.
Because I am not a very spontaneous person. So when I was young and single, I was super spontaneous. I would wake up and someone would be like, hey, let's go do such and such. And I'm like, bet, let's go. All right. Like, I'm on it. ready to go. No cap. Okay. I'm using all the slang terms to make my son cringe. So I was really spontaneous, and then I had children.
Actually,
you guys aren't the problem, but what happens is, especially when you have young children, babies, infants, toddlers, they have a lot of needs. And so, you know, Mariah was primarily bottle fed, so I couldn't go anywhere without making sure I had a full measure of formula sanitized water for her. You know what I mean? You have to have enough diapers. You have to have at least one, maybe two outfits to change into just in case, you know, there's an accident or something, she gets messy, you can change her. You have to make sure that you have enough wipes. You have to make sure that you have any medication that the child might need. And on top of, like, if you're actually traveling, like if you're going to use public transport, do you need to bring, like, a car seat for when you get there? Or, you know, like, how are we going to do this? And there's porta cribs, like travel cribs, travel swings, like it's a whole thing. Like you haven't had kids yet, bro. But let me tell you, if you're going to be gone for an extended amount of time, that there are things you need for the kids. Like there just are. And so, so I would just find that it was harder and harder for me to make plans on the spot. And then I had two more children, and we homeschool. So, like, now I'm a little better, but I still need some time to plan and adjust. Okay, so, you know, if we're going to go to, you know, a performance, or, like, on Monday we went to see the eclipse, right? And we had co-op right afterwards, and we still had to do a full school day, so we're bringing school in the car to be able to do while we're driving. Like, it's a thing, right?
And so, like, I'm just going to say it's a little bit crazy having to plan all that. And it makes it hard for me to have an attitude of I'm just going to drop everything and do whatever Jesus says to do today. Like, you know, if I woke up today, you know, and he said, after the show, you're going to leave and you're going to go minister in the park, and I want you to bring some sandwiches to hand out. Like, I'd be like, whoa, whole schedule here. Like, what's up? I have things to do. We have school to plan. I have some work to get done this afternoon. You know what I mean? Because I have plans that I sometimes think are important. And really, honestly, nothing is ever as important as what Jesus has for us to do. Everything else is reschedulable, right? But don't we get into our rut and not want to be available?
Yep.
So what about you? What does following Jesus look like for you? Do you have things that it's hard for you to be able to just, like, release?
I don't know. I kind of feel like I'm in the middle. I feel like on a good day, I'm like, woo, let's go, Jesus. I'm ready to do whatever. And then on a bad day, if I'm, like, just really down, I'm like, do I have to?
I don't want to do nothing.
Oh, my God. That's exactly what I figured. I'm like, I don't want to do that.
Right.
No.
Right.
He's like, well, if you don't want to do that, you can do this. No!
He says, I don't want to do nothing. I'm playing my video game or whatever, right? Like we get into whatever it is. And so for you, because you're a kid, you just might be distracted doing, like, whatever you want to do, right? For me, sometimes the things can feel really important. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's not just I don't want to. It's like, but what am I going to do about the kids? You know, what about school? Like, all these things feel really important, but nothing's nearly as important to what God's calling us to do, right? So, like, would I have been the person who's out in the middle of my workday, because the fishermen were in the middle of their workday, and jump out of the boat and just leave? Like, it's kind of crazy, right?
I'd probably say goodbye to my family. I'd probably have a party then leave the next day.
Okay, see? But that's not what he's asking. He's like, come on, let's go. Now. Let's go. It's hard. It's harder than you might think.
I mean, like, they probably wouldn't be able to find him afterwards because he, like, left the city the next day.
Now I'm going to tell you, I wish that Mariah was here for this one. She would have had a great answer. Are you ready? Are you a rule follower?
Oh.
Is it hard to focus on a relationship with Jesus when you're busy trying to live right? Now, this is always a great question to have when Mariah's here because she, like, came onto the earth being the kind of person who wants to know what you want from her. She wants rules. She wants structure. Like, that's just her life, and that's what makes her happy. So if there's not a structure there, she'll build one in. I'm literally the opposite, so that made me a great parent for her. Poor kid. Because I oppose structure. I dislike structure. I'm literally the person that a lot of...
I also oppose structure.
Yeah, you're a lot like me, right? Don't love being told what to do. You don't want a schedule, even a schedule that you made up telling you what to do.
Ugh.
Right? Like,
I tried one of those once. It did not go well. No. I went into my room, then I tore it off the next day.
Right. Like, that's the thing.
I
have a tendency to just ignore it. So what about, like, legalistic type rules, like how we're supposed to live? Do you find that you cling to those at all?
No.
You don't?
No.
No? Not at all? You're not counting on being a good boy?
No.
No, that's not a distraction
for you. That's not
going
to get to heaven.
No, it's not going to get to heaven, that's for sure. That is for sure.
Follow the rules of this world, you're going to follow the ways of this world. If you follow the ways of this world, then you're going to be the world, like...
Right. I mean, I am one of those, like, more righteous living types, and I don't judge other people for not living the way I do.
It's good to not get, like, arrested.
Wow.
So those are some rules that I follow.
I promise you guys I did not set the bar that low. Not to get arrested. Like, that's the bare minimum.
Did you?
Yeah, I promise. But I am pretty much, I love flexibility. I love operating and living in freedom.
one of the things I'm most thankful for in living in the United States is the fact that I can operate and live in freedom. And that's really, really wonderful for me. And I don't allow my freedom to allow me to sin. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's not leading me into sin. But I do like flexibility. And where I don't express my freedom, so for example, I don't have a lot of habits. Like, I don't gamble, which is important, I think, if you live in Las Vegas. I don't drink. Never really have. But I don't judge other people for doing it. And it's a choice I made a long time ago, so I'm pretty comfortable with it. So I don't feel like I have to be legalistic about it. It's just part of who I am. How can we be intentional about looking for Jesus every day?
Carrying like a pocket Bible around and telling other people about the good news.
Okay. I mean, that's one way, certainly, right?
Like something that you used to do?
I actually, so before, this is going to sound like ancient times for you. Before we had cell phones that were like little computers, okay, we had flip phones and we had pagers, and I was already a Christian, and they didn't have the YouVersion Bible app that we all use, that free, amazing Bible app that everybody has, right?
No.
Right? And so we didn't have that. And so I actually had a very small little Bible, which I probably can no longer read without a microscope.
Or your reading glasses.
Or
like 10 pairs of your reading glasses.
Something. Like, the print is so small. Okay? And I just don't see like that anymore. But I still have the Bible. It lived in my purse for about 7 years. And I utilized it so I could read when I was at work and I could be on my break, or if I wanted to talk to somebody about Jesus, I had the Bible there for a reference. So we could certainly do that. I have a friend whose daily practice is when she wakes up, as she's praying, she's like, God, what do you want me to do today? And just opens her schedule up to him. And that's really awesome, too. And I know that Mariah had experienced a lot of this when she was on a DTS with YWAM, Youth with a Mission. And a DTS is a discipleship training school. So she went there for 3 months, and one time she woke up, and they were like, pack your bags, we're driving to Florida, and it threw her for a loop. 'Cause God was calling her to Florida. And she didn't know she was going on a trip, and she was tired and didn't want to travel anymore. Yeah, which it was an amazing experience. She went to the Send there. We actually went back to the Send another time. But, you know, for us folks who like to plan, it can be really, really tough. How about this? Do we live our lives with a willingness to drop our plans for Jesus at any time?
For me, wouldn't say any time, but Thursdays. Thursdays, I will drop all my plans for God.
Okay.
Because I only plan to school.
Right. So to clarify, on Monday we have co-op.
On Tuesday we have scouts.
Wednesday, youth group and the radio show.
And Thursday we have nothing. Friday we have PE or homeschool skate.
Right.
And then Saturday and Sunday, just like the calm after the storm.
Well, there's all sorts of family plans that usually take place on Saturday and Sunday, and right now you're selling camp cards for scouts, so you've got that going on. I know you love it. And, of course, church. At any time that there's, like, a birthday party or celebration or something like that, and, of course, Mom and Caitlin very often work on the weekends as well, right? So, actually, the reason why, do you know why Thursday is empty? Because it's my Sabbath day. I refuse to do anything on Thursday. So that's really it. Do we idolize our past and our identity above who God is making us to be?
Ooh.
Yeah, that one hurt, right? Okay. Is that a thing for us? Am I more connected with who I was than who I am becoming? Am I safeguarding my past identity or my current identity or even my sin to a point where I can't identify with Jesus Christ and be his hands and feet here, which is what we're called to do as ministers of the gospel. Do you have anything to say on that, Lynn?
I feel like I'm like 50-50. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of connected to my past self, but also like trying to become more of a person who lives like Jesus.
Right. I mean, it doesn't even have to be a past self. Sometimes it's like who we currently are. Like, I think that, you know,
like the world side of us and the Jesus side of us.
Right. Like, do you introduce yourself as, hi, I'm Cross, I'm a Christian? Or do you say, hi, I'm Cross, I'm 12, I like acting and basketball, and oh yeah, I study Bible and like Jesus too. You know what I'm saying? Like, is he an afterthought or is he your key core identity? And I don't think that is something that any of us escape, but some of us suffer from it more than others. You know, are we identifying with our sexuality above Jesus? Are we identifying with our past? I'm a sinner saved by grace. Rather than identifying as Jesus Christ and saints? Are we identifying with our worldly interests or status, or are we identifying with Jesus Christ? And I think that's one that, like, I know I personally could work on it, but I don't think I know anybody who couldn't. You know what I mean? That's
yeah.
A hard one. We have one more question. Do you want to do one more question and we're done?
Let's do one more question and we're done.
Okay. Are we willing to look for God to work and move in unexpected places and ways?
Ooh.
Could we be missing things he wants us to do and see because we're limiting God and his interactions to things that make us comfortable? That, I think, is a hard question because I think at its core... I think at its core, we have to ask ourselves who I am uncomfortable talking to Jesus about. Who am I uncomfortable approaching with the gospel? Because that's where we're not wanting to see or looking to see God work in new and unexpected ways. So, you know, if you're a guy, are you uncomfortable talking to women about Jesus? Or if you're a woman, are you uncomfortable talking to a man? If you saw a gang member or a person who was a member of a biker gang, would you think to yourself, I would like to talk to them about Jesus? What about someone who is part of an alternative lifestyle? Do you think to yourself that they would have to confront so much and potentially give up so much that you don't want to introduce them to Jesus? Do you think that the things that you'd say would possibly be hurtful, even though they would also ultimately be helpful? Do you avoid that conversation? Do I avoid those conversations? When I see a homeless person on the street, am I as willing to talk to them about Jesus as the gentleman that I just met in the three-piece suit? Like, I really feel like that was the question that I really want to ponder and think about this week is am I really looking for Jesus in Nazareth? I know in Vegas he can do wonders and he can work all sorts of good. Like, I've seen it with my own eyes, but am I still looking for him to operate through me in this town where sin abounds? Are we looking for him to operate in unexpected ways with unexpected people, knowing that that person who's been an atheist all of their life just might open their eyes up and discover a relationship with Jesus? Am I willing to take the chance and knowing that there could be blowback to talking to people in an alternative lifestyle, knowing that they may say, well, you know, you're just hateful, but knowing that I'm coming out of a heart of love and wanting to see salvation happen for them, knowing that God died for them, that Jesus died for them, was resurrected for them, that the price that he paid was paid in full for them, knowing that I want to see them come to salvation. Am I willing to do those things? They're hard things. But I think that we need to be thoughtful and introspective constantly about those hard things. So that's my takeaway from this whole thing, was just watching how these disciples reacted, and am I still looking for him to work in the places unexpected, with the people who hate me, with people who yell at me and think terrible things about me,
do I still know that if I lead with the gospel, if I lead with Jesus' words, that the words of the Bible don't return void? Do I come with a hopeful heart, knowing that I'm an ambassador of Christ and knowing that the world hated him too? Am I still hopeful for their salvation? And that, I think, is just what I want to kind of put in my pocket and take with me this week. What do you think, Cross?
Yes.
He says yes. That's all he's got for us on that. Did you have anything else to add to that question, buddy?
No.
No. All right. Well, I think that we're done here. We cleared it in an hour. Because we didn't have a guest. I need to get back on the guest roster, and I apologize for not having a guest. But we're all done for today. I hope you enjoyed our study today. Did you like it?
I did like it. Except for the part where I had to hide.
Except for the part that you had to hide. Maybe that's a good question to think about, right? Maybe it's a good question to think about. I always think specifically about people who, like, I know don't like me. Like, am I really, like, they have been clear. I'm not
ever. He has this friend on Facebook. And he is not Christian, and they just go back and forth, and it's so funny.
But we're good friends, and we enjoy the back and forth. You know,
he enjoys her rebuttals, and she enjoys how screwed up his understanding is.
No, it's not screwed up. He's got a different worldview, and I understand that. And I think that for me, a lot of times, this particular person, his worldview is really been jaded from what you can tell are really bad experiences with Christians. And people have those. I don't know what to say. Like, if you've been around a church at any point in time, for any length of time, you're going to have a bad Christian experience somewhere. You know, there's a Christian at church that they're claiming to be Christian, but they are accusatory, or they're mean with you, or they're aggressive with you, or like something that is not in the character of Christ. And a lot of people have experienced this. You know, and I don't think that, like, my part as representing Christ is to say, listen, sometimes us Christians are kind of screwed up. You know, like, you're catching us mid-sanctification, okay? We may be justified before God, but we aren't clean down here. We're not living right down here necessarily. And so I think a lot of it is to open up discourse and to be able to share Christ, to be a safe place where people can ask really crazy, hard questions, to be able to be an ambassador who says, okay, listen, people are still screwed up. Look to Jesus. Tell me, do you have a problem with Jesus or do you have a problem with his followers?
Ooh.
You know, like, and I don't blame you for having a problem with his followers. I've had problems with his followers, okay? In fact, Jesus had problems with his followers. You know, Jesus is...
You called one of those Satan ones.
Right. And those are the ones that were on his side. Remember the ones that weren't on his side, okay? The religious people that weren't on his side killed him. Okay? So do we have a problem with Jesus or do we have a problem with people? And by the way, Jesus had a problem with people too. That's why he came.
I'll admit, people are not my favorite.
I really love people. But you know what? Like, I really do, but I love them with a sense of compassion and love that I know that God can make this world better and heal people. And I desperately want to see people healed. So yeah, like, have those conversations with the people that you're like, I don't even know if God is going to work in their life. Because we're called to. Because we're called to love others. And when you truly love someone else, you don't want to see them end up outside of relationship with God eternally. Like, you want to see them in a place where they know and love God. You know, ultimately, I hope that all the people that I know that I get an opportunity to interact with will come to a saving knowledge of Jesus Christ. I don't get to control that, but what I can do is in every interaction possible, I can introduce them to Jesus and I can teach them more about my Savior and hope that they open up their heart and their mind to Jesus. That's the ultimate. You know what I mean? And if not, by the way, I don't just jump out of relationship with them. Like, I'm called to love them. And I do develop a heart for each of these people. So, you know, do we back out of conversations that are tough with people who have alternative lifestyles? That's a hard question. You know what I mean? Very often these conversations end up in a stalemate Usually the stalemate that I see is when people say, well, if God is calling me to give up anything about myself or the way I live, I don't want to follow a God like that. And that's a hard statement as a Christian because you're like, wow, I mean, God does call us to give up everything. Wow, that's a very difficult, blatant rejection of Jesus. You know,
right.
That's a hard statement to settle in. And so we go and pray, right? We don't pray for them. You know, we don't stop loving them. We don't stop caring for them. We don't stop ministering to them. We just continue to pray for them.
Yep.
You know, and continue to seek truth in the gentlest, most loving spirit that we can. Because ultimately, I'm with Jesus that everyone would come and be saved. Like I am with him on that. I don't want to leave a single soul behind that I could bring with me. So, all right, are we done?
Yep, we're done.
Okay, do you want to pray us out?
We're done.
Okay.
So I keep saying at the scout meetings, and they say, do you want to pray us out? I say, that's my job.
That's my job, that's what I do here.
Like the only reason that I come. All right, Lord God, thank you for this day. Thank you for letting the show go well, even though we had some technical difficulties. Better slap Satan upside the head for that.
Thank you for helping us fix it.
Yeah. And we pray that we can continue to spread your word. And that the new radio show that I'm starting to do go well.
Okay, yeah, we're working on something, but...
That mom will co-host.
Yeah. Yes. So we're probably going to do it parallel because you don't want to wait 2 years. No. So, but Cross is going to be working on a project where he's going to teach on the book of Judges because that's his very favorite book of the Bible, believe it or not. And
I really love the Old Testament. Like, it's not just, like, Judges. It's, like, the whole...
It's a lot of adventure.
I really like Up to the Kings.
Okay.
Like, it's just really interesting to see how they keep breaking the covenant over and over and over and over.
So it's Judges, 1st and 2nd Samuel, 1st and 2nd Kings. What's your favorite section there?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So, but he wants to start working in Judges, and we'll have more about that soon. I'm going to say probably, how many Judges are there in Judges? Six. So I'm going to say it's probably going to take you about a year to develop out the show. And then we'll start announcing when you'll be able to hear him. Again, like I said, probably just in this second hour and a half segment that we have available. And then I would sit and co-host with him, which would be fun. All right. So something to look forward to, guys. And thank you for joining us. And we will see you guys next week, okay?
Yep.
In Chapter 2.
Chapter 2.
Thank goodness.
Hopefully it won't take 10 years. I mean,
how many chapters are there?
Okay. Because I already have the Bible on there.
Okay. I'm so slow. But it's all good stuff, right?
There are 21 chapters.
Oh, no. There's 21. Wow. Okay.
She says, oh, no.
Oh, no. I'm thinking to myself, dude, wow, over 200 episodes might be a little much, but yeah. I mean, if we move at the same rate. Anyway, that would be... Not amazing, but, you know,
right,
whatever God leads. Okay.
So we're going to go now.
We're going to go now, and we'll talk to you guys next week. Have a good one.
Bye.
Bye.